Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see.
Wow. Oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that
culture? Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong! Las Culturistas calling.
Bowen couldn't let me have one thing, and he had a threesome this week.
You
couldn't let me have one thing.
Give me 1 second. You are going right into it. Okay, fine. What do you mean you couldn't let me? You had a threesome last week.
I had a threesome last week, and it was major news in my life. And then I get a text. Oh my God, you'll never guess what happened last night by happenstance. I had a threesome too.
Don't do this, queen.
You're right. Let's cut this and start over.
No, we're not going to do that. Are you hurt that I had a threesome?
No. It was really just a sort of clever way, pithy way of me to sort of talk about the threesome. Because I want to know. Because you did it off Grindr, yes?
I don't want to reveal the mechanics.
Well,
Not to say that they were mechanics. I did not have a threesome with mechanics.
And it would be fine if you did.
It'd be fine.
Some of them are gay. It's actually real culture number 49. Mechanics.
Some of them are gay.
Just because in film and television you see them often like presented as a straight man does not mean there aren't gay mechanics out there. We see you.
Everybody, fuck a blue-collar queer this summer. That's all we're saying.
Fuck a real working-class person. If Mayor of Easttown has shown us anything...
You said you better fuck a real working-class person.
There are fuckable
even if they're
working
a cop.
People out there. Even if they're a cop, like mayor.
Like
right,
mayor.
Bowen? All cops.
Oh, cops.
All mayors are bad.
Including mayor.
Those
now,
rascals.
I did see a bit of feedback last week that people thought that we spent too much time on my hatred for Ramona Singer and not as much time on your threesome.
Well, we don't have to return. I just simply wanted to say that I now share with my sister the threesome experience.
Oh, but I had one moment before years ago.
I didn't know about that.
Kind of tragic. I like went to...
Someone died?
No. Not that kind of tragic, but...
Well, Shakespeare would say there's really no other kind, but go on.
Shakespeare would say that?
Yeah, he would. He actually defined tragedy as a death at the end. So,
interesting.
Read up. Okay,
I apologize. We don't have to get into that. Actually, no, I don't feel comfortable talking about this. Because you know what I realize? You know what I forget is that...
What? Your parents listen?
Or just that mixed company listens. Like, I should treat the pod more as mixed company. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes. I don't mean to... I think what's nice is that I get to talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. We both get to talk about things without...
Right.
We're not playing to the audience necessarily all the time.
Of course. Yeah, no. Never.
Never. So that's all I want to say. You're patronizing me.
Are you sort of having sort of a hangover about I don't think so, honey, cocaine?
No. I stand by it. I think I don't think so, honey, cocaine is one of my better... I don't have too many great I don't think so, honeys. Stop. It's true. I think that was one of my better ones.
And I think it was fantastic.
And it was in a serotonin crater that I was able to like produce that text, that work, and it really should open up a conversation about where do I produce the best work from emotionally. And sometimes I might mean, you know, on a come down from a party drug, but just kidding. I won't do that.
I got to tell you, it's your reminder to yourself to treat the pod like it's mixed company is really a reminder to me as well.
Because
I was actually going
to
get on here and I was going to do, I don't think so, honey, Wiggly Bottoms. And now you're... Well, I think
you should still do this.
Okay, because I had an experience on the app Grindr the other night where I dealt with a bottom that was too wiggly, wiggling around like a damn worm. And I'm telling you,
what are you talking? Is this wiggly in like the fucking Utica
like
queen
this
sense?
Girl? Like, no, well, first of all, not, but like, imagine like for, so famously during sex, you're trying to get one thing into another. Oftentimes.
Well, I mean, if you're centralizing penetration, then yeah.
Oh my God. Sometimes on this podcast, I have to take a deep breath, readers. Sometimes on this podcast, I have to take such a deep breath that I cough. Did you ever take such a deep breath and inhale an intake of air so sharp that you cough? That's how I feel on this podcast sometimes with the way I get spoken to. Anyway, I was trying to get my
dick in.
Thick dick into
thick dick
into a beehole.
Yeah.
And this bottom was wiggling like a damn
jumping beam.
As and he was like, was he trying to be sexy?
I think it was a mixture of, yeah, I'm sexy. Oh. And also, I want the dick bad. And I gotta tell you, I want to get it in there bad. But you can't be wiggling around like a wiggle worm.
Imagine the Code Black episode of Grey's Anatomy. And the fucking patient, the guy who got the fucking artillery shell in his fucking chest and in his abdomen was wiggling around while Meredith was like, sir, I'm trying to see my boyfriend again.
It was not unlike that. It was not unlike that.
Or if Christina Ricci was like, I'm 22 years old. Oh my God, that's a moment.
Wow, Christina the transition Ricci. from this wiggly bottom story to Christina Ricci is good. Only on Lost Culch.
Only on Lost Culch. Did you see this New York Magazine cover that came out this week? The Return of FOMO. And ooh, we better
the
talk
Return
about
this. Of FOMO. Oh, yes.
Because I think this week in specifically, yeah. I went to a park gathering yesterday, and it was with a friend of the pod, Stradio Lab co-host George Severus.
Love. Was he looking like a damn stud?
He looked great.
Oh, he always does.
It was George and his boyfriend who wrote the cover story, Matthew Schneier. And we all, like, there was a lull in the conversation. And then all three of us, including, and then Misha, our friend Misha Townsend, all four of us were like, wait, are we all hungover right now? Oh, yeah. And also, we have been so overstimulated in our social lives this week in particular that we're just like, there's nothing to talk about. Like,
exactly.
There was such a low ceiling on what to talk about. You're making a face.
No, well, I'm identifying.
Okay,
the face I'm making is one of recognition.
That is
a facial expression. Recognition is a facial expression. And it goes like this.
Do you do it? Yeah. Can I do mine?
Yeah. Yes, queen. Queen, yes. Queen. King, slay with that face.
Thank you.
You slay. Did it. You Thank did you. It.
Thank you.
Now, can I say also, it is, of course, famously June, the Pride month, the month of let the readers know I'm doing air quotes pride.
Pride.
AKA the month of be a bitch to your closest friends is upon us. And several of my closest friends are being such bitches to me. It's unbelievable. And the Pride month has barely even started.
It's barely even started. Okay. I don't mean to make this about me. Have I been a bitch to you?
No.
This Pride.
You have not been a bitch to me at all, but guess what? It's because you haven't really had much of an opportunity. I'm loath to find out what's going to happen when I get to New York. I'm loath to find out. An expression that I sort of know what it is.
You are setting up a self-fulfilling prophecy that I will be a bitch to
you. No, are you saying I'm dress rehearsing are you saying I'm dress rehearsing tragedy?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not.
Here's what's not going to happen.
Oh, tell me, King. Oh my God. First of all, let me wiggle towards you right now.
Wiggle towards my thick deck.
Bowen, fuck me right now.
Here's what's not going to happen.
Oh God.
Here's what's not going to happen. You ready?
Yeah.
Can you take it? You're not going to set up a trap for me to fall into where I'm mean to you. I'm a bitch to you.
No.
Where I maybe even call out some uncouth behavior that you are sort of acting out.
This is to say that I ever behave in an uncouth manner. You're saying I believe in untoward manner?
No, but I'm saying I don't want, on the off chance, on the edge case that you do, I don't want
edge case.
Yeah.
Hot.
You like that? Yeah. Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I am so fucking excited that you are coming to New York City for the first post-vax pride.
Me
in New
too.
York.
Oh my God. I can't tell you.
And we're not, it's good vibes only, okay? You fucking bitch.
I'm the good vibes.
I know you.
It's everyone
that's
else that's bad vibes.
You're right. You're right. You're right. And you're right.
It seems like lately these days, I will step into a space, good vibes, and everyone else is bad vibes. And I'm like, can I catch a goddamn break?
Could I be any more of good vibes?
Speaking of good vibes.
Oh my God.
Shit.
Our guest.
Exclamation point. Our guest.
This short I sound between shit and thick deck. You are leading into this summer, and I really embrace that.
Let me say.
Go say something.
This is a talent. And I met our guest in, yes, the city of Toronto.
Toronto.
And it was when, actually, I Don't Think So Honey was being performed in Toronto. Ugh. And you, Bo and Yang, were famously not at that show because I believe it was at one of the during one of the performances of the show Saturday Night Live. Now,
I was a first season writer at SNL.
Yes.
And I could not make it to that show. But I remember when we posted that lineup, the comments, I remember this day.
They were saying Celeste, Celeste,
Celeste,
Celeste,
Celeste.
Often there were exclamation points after the word Celeste. They would say Celeste,
Celeste, exclamation.
And we're sort of whispering because that's an Instagram scream. They were saying Celeste,
Celeste.
They were really clamoring. And I was there hosting the show with one Dave Mazzoni. And we walked away from that show and we said our favorite
was
Celeste. And this is no shade on everyone. Oh. But we left and there was a star and that was
Celeste.
And so then I'm the opposite of loath to find out, which I sort of know what it means.
Sort of
that
know.
Celeste had moved to New York City. Now, at the time I was living there and every single time I booked a show, I said Celeste. And then
I did come to a show where...
You did come to my mind.
You hosted a show, Club Coming, and then Celeste was one of the... I was on the lineup, and I thought...
They did an iconic thing.
Which was...
They did an iconic thing when they walked over to the piano and played a single note.
I remember this moment. And that was Ali Main vibes down. A Star Is Born.
This was a new sort of... I stumbled upon something new when I found out they had the musical talent as well. To sort of walk over to the piano, pluck out a single perfect note. Because that's the thing about playing one note. It's always perfect. That's why you don't play more than one. Because, you know.
Oh my God, you're so right. You're so right. Because if you play another note, then that is automatic context.
Could sound bad.
It makes the first note make no sense.
Could sound bad. And so can you talk about what happened with Time?
So with Time, they were a very celebrated writer, and then they were hired as a writer on SNL, the only writer on SNL during its COVID season.
Oh my God, the storied COVID season. There was very few things have been as hard as pulling off a season of SNL during COVID. And there's been wars, and there's been this season of SNL during COVID, and we have with us a survivor.
A survivor, and I'm telling you all, when Tom Shales and James Andrew Miller come out with their new edition of Life from New York, an uncensored oral history of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, can't wait
for that. You're going to get a little fucking pull quote from Celeste Yim, our guest, being like, yeah, it was crazy. It was nuts.
And then you'll be like,
yes. No, that's not my impression of them. But I think they will give off that vibe of being like, it was cool. It was chill. So this is what's happened. Celeste had, I think, a banner first season at SNL.
I was going to say banner.
They're looking embarrassed, but truly worked on some truly, truly, truly fantastic texts, we should say. And I think, you're going to really know them going
forward
even more.
And I think the best is yet to come.
The best is yet to come.
And I'm thrilled. To welcome to Lost Culture and into the ears of the readers. The incredible, stunning. The space is filled with beauty because there's towels and curtains hanging in a closet space surrounding our guest, Celeste!
Yeah! Yeah! Celeste, talk about how you're feeling.
You guys, I am pretty excited to learn how much that you each are deputized to sort of stop mid-sentence and say, we're going to cut this out and let's take it again.
No! Can I say, it's usually never this much.
It's never this much.
I feel that we are in sort of, and this is a compliment to you, we're in a very comfortable place.
Oh, I feel that.
No, you're insulted by that, I can tell.
No. To peek behind the curtain at this process...
Did you hear that?
No, we're not gonna do this.
Please.
Stop, don't
no,
do
please.
This.
You have something to say? Go ahead. I don't want to end this out.
He perked up as soon as you said process.
Sorry, what was I supposed to do? Not?
But now we have to talk about Canadian accents.
Don't act like you're not hard as a rock.
Flop.
Don't act like you're not hard as a rock wanting to talk about Canada.
Stop
which I'm
this.
Sure you it both was. Bonded over being from quote unquote from Canada. Please.
We actually have not really like emotionally bonded over. We've only talked about Canada in a functional, like, how do we, what do we pull from that's Canadian in order to service mm-hmm. this piece of writing?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree?
In a requisite way. It's been a sterile relationship.
It's been a very sterile discourse on Canada between mm-hmm. the two of us.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, it's as needed.
As needed. It's ad hoc. It's an ad hoc discussion of Canada.
Yeah.
Should we have this conversation now?
Have it out.
Well, if you please.
Okay, so let's tell everyone where you grew up and what was Canada like. And
well, guess what? I'm from Toronto.
Okay.
And actually, that was already said. And, yeah. and
we didn't say you were from there. We just said you were there at a show.
That's true. And can I?
Yes.
And this is controversial.
Yes.
And I actually hesitate to say this.
No, you should say it.
No, what?
I actually was not at that show.
What?
This is what happened.
Yes, you were.
Hold on. This is what happened.
Oh, this is.
Everybody needs to calm down.
Okay, I'm calm.
Okay, what happened?
But I think that you've intuited something that is appropriate, which is that I helped recommend names for that show.
You did. In fact, okay. In fact, I think
it's
you were
back.
Listed on the show poster because you were to do the show.
Well, I had just moved to New York at the time.
This what is what was. Happened. But then what didn't happen was that Matt and Dave left the show and said our favorite was Celeste.
Okay, no, because I've done many other shows with Celeste, and almost every single time I leave it, I say they were my favorite bar
and
none.
There it is. And there
and,
it is.
And you know, that's why I remember you being such a big part of it is because you truly helped program it.
Okay, fair.
But I have to say that in listening to the story, I felt that what you were saying was true.
Mm-hmm.
It did not feel like a lie to me, even though I intellectually had the knowledge to kind of recall upon that I in fact was not there.
You
well,
literally
Matt is a gaslighter, big timer. Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's true. And I guess what I should do is be like, sorry to say that you were somewhere where you weren't. But also I want to say that actually kind of rocks.
It's cool.
That you were the best part of a show you were on.
It's cool. I'm feeling pretty cool.
But I did. Wait, you were not in Toronto at all at that time? That's cuckoo to me.
I had just moved to Brooklyn, New York. And yeah. I was so upset to have missed it. And then I think you guys did one like a very soon
Hustling.
After that. Yeah, like in New York, and it was
You
fine.
Know what it was? It was this is the oral history of Celeste at I Don't Think So Honey. Asked to do the Toronto version because everyone said when
they
I asked
who Oh, we asked them.
We asked them, and then I was like, wait, who are the top people that I must ask? And it was everyone said this is where we come in, Bowen, with the Celeste of
yes,
it all.
Yes,
because
yes,
everyone
yes.
was saying Celeste, without a doubt, Celeste, there's no one else. And so I was like, Celeste. And so then I reach out to Celeste. Celeste says, moving to New York, got to do a show there. And I think at that point I was like, oh, you'll do the one in Brooklyn then, because we're doing one imminently when we come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then Celeste programs I Don't Think So Honey Toronto.
I see. Okay, I'm looking through these email chains.
Oh,
pulling up the
my
receipts.
God. We have
no,
the bibliography.
Here we go. Here we go.
That
here we go. Here
me.
We go. No. And Celeste, you provided 9 names.
Unbelievable.
And you said, okay, here we go. Can I actually read these emails?
No. Are they?
So Matt reaches out to Matt. We all sound great, actually. Hey, Celeste, Matt Rogers and Bo Nying here on the podcast Lost Culturistas. We were given.
And what's the date?
This is September 13th, 2018. We were given your contact info from the Side Note Boys, and we would love to have you join us for a live show that we were doing called I Don't Think So Honey at JFL Toronto on September 29th. The concept of the show, blah, blah, blah. And then you say, thanks so much for reaching out. I love IDTSH and Lost Culturistas. I'm so glad you're bringing the show to Toronto. You're going to love the audiences, and it's going to be so mutual. I don't think I'm going to be back in Toronto that weekend, unfortunately.
Shit.
But I actually moved to Brooklyn in August, so I would love to do it here sometime if you'll have me. Thanks again for asking. Okay, is this actually getting uncomfortable?
I mean, for
no.
sure. Oh. What? We said the same thing, I think.
I just think it's very important that we get to the bottom of this
mm-hmm.
on a factual level.
Here's what's interesting. there were most of the facts were true.
Yeah.
And that is astonishing.
And that's like, that's what could make it a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, if we could make a movie of this and it could be based on a true story. You know what I mean?
Like, what happened was, Matt, you are a writer and you have writer brain. And your brain was thinking, what's the most compelling way of kind of bringing this history to the public?
Right.
To the public.
Right.
And what you came up with was a mostly true, extremely exciting, and very flattering story about.
Yeah. And it was about how you stole the show and our hearts.
Yeah.
And from then on, it was Celeste did every single show I ever booked and was the standout of every single thing before she was hired as a writer on the show Saturday Night Live and had, I believe, what Bone called a banner year season. And that's heroic.
But Celeste, can you confirm if you did indeed play one single note at Club Coming before launching into a set?
I have to be honest, is extremely true.
Yeah. I love it.
Because you know who had been sort of tinkling the keys before that was one Henry Kapersky, who plays famously many notes. He plays many notes, sometimes all at once. Mm-hmm. Like different notes coming together to really create, mm-hmm. I believe, what we call in the popular community.
The community of the popular.
Yes, the populace that would refer to this as,
which means popular
music.
People.
And so to see Henry sort of get up there and sort of work so hard playing all these notes, and then to see Celeste get up there play a single note and steal the show had to hurt.
And everyone's saying,
and so far as music, it's what I always say to Henry. Work smarter, not harder. Henry.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Pathetic.
Ridiculous. Okay. So it was Toronto, mm-hmm. and then it was New York, and then that's been it.
Yeah. And now it's Closet in San Francisco.
Do you want to talk about this little California journey you're on? Because you texted me last night while I was stoned out of my mind. Mm-hmm. And I texted Celeste last night. I was like, we were just catching up, and then at one point I just go, oh my God, it might be because I'm stoned, but I really do feel, I'm watching the Queen's Gambit right now because I didn't finish it back in the fall. I'm like, God, what a star. Whatever. We were talking about Anya Taylor-Joy.
You were talking about Anya.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
We were talking about Anya.
We were talking about Anya. It's Anya.
Is it Anya?
We're talking Anya. And I wasn't at the show in Toronto, Matt.
Oh, you crazy! Wait, this is actually breaking news. It's Anya Taylor-Joy.
There was a moment in her monologue that got cut after Dress where there was a joke, I believe, written by the genius Anna Dresden that was, mm-hmm. it's Anya, not Anya. It's like aneurysm, which is the best example I can come up with, unfortunately. Like,
that's funny.
But it's a good mnemonic.
I actually think that was her joke, not to...
Fuck!
I mean,
we're getting
credit
all
credit.
Of this.
You guys really have to read so much more.
We have to read.
We do.
That's actually true.
Wait. I have a question. Were you as taken with Anya mm-hmm. as Bowen was? Because Bowen actually, he doesn't always do this because I feel like he doesn't want to be like uncool. But he'll sort of, I'll be the one that asks like, so how is so-and-so? Mm-hmm, and I'll get a truthful answer from my sister. I really
usually it's like, great. Usually everyone's good.
He never says bad. He'll either say fine or he'll say great. And for Anya, it was, gotta say, good vibes. Lover, cool as hell, funny mm-hmm. and down. Were you as taken with Anya as our girl Bowen was?
I have to be honest once again and go with yes.
Yeah. Oh!
It's interesting because I do feel, there's usually not much to report. Right. I would say.
Like, really? There really isn't.
Yeah, like just, especially if it's like a question like, you know, are they cool? You know, it's like, there's usually no news, right. But we were obsessed with her.
But you and me, but you and I, and especially you had multiple contexts of spending time with her, interacting with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think when you and I shared those interactions, like we would like watch her like on the like at Village or whatever, we'd be like, oh my God, she's so good,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, she could really, like, she was really cool and she could hang. Like,
she could hang.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to say, though, Celeste, and I hate to break this to you, please, but I feel like whenever I'm around you, I always am trying to be on my coolest behavior.
How do you, how does that make you feel? Celeste, they have a cool sort of magnetism, wow, that actually draws, it's like cupping, where it sort of draws it out of other, oh, people.
You have the X
sort
factor.
Of leaves a bruise.
Yeah.
It leaves a bruise, but it's actually, but then it, like, people still put it on the Insta stories because they want to, they want to show.
They put on Insta stories and they paid for it.
Wow.
that they're going to acupressure or whatever the hell, you know?
Yes. Matt, I think you're really cool around me.
I try. That's what he's saying. I'm trying super hard. You know what I mean? You've also seen me in zones where I'm like, got to be a little cool because I'm like hosting a show or like,
yeah, yeah, you're
public doing
facing.
A thing, public mm-hmm. facing, public mm-hmm. facing Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, yeah, flop inward
it's
facing
industry Matt.
Matt.
It's industry Matt. It's industry
Matt. Yeah.
Talk about this California journey. What brought you there? Who are you seeing? Everything. How do you feel about California in general? Recently, they have removed, the judge
Careful.
Struck down the assault weapons ban.
Mm-hmm.
And you
that's sort
you
of
do
what
not,
brought me here.
That's what brought you there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm in SF right now, and I'm staying in an Airbnb, not to dox my own self. Mm. But I, in preparation for this recording, I did hang what could only be described as dirty towels and sheets.
Yes.
Around a closet to sort
yes.
of, I don't really know. I think I was feeling bad that I didn't have an external microphone and sort of had to compensate for that in a physical way.
Celeste.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to bring this into this discussion.
No, no problem.
But did I not tell you it's no worries if you don't have an external mic?
You did. Say that, but you also followed up about whether or not I had an
because
external.
You didn't answer, and I and then and this is what happened. Matt and the producers of this show
mm-hmm.
already been thrown under the bus. I just want to point out
we're completely. Following up with me. They were like, "Do they have a mic?" And I was like, "I'm asking, and I will report back when I know." And so then I felt the need to double pump and ask you again and be like, I'm sorry,
mm-hmm.
let me know. And do let me know when you have, if you have a mic. And,
for sure.
And to know now that, oh my God, this is awful. To know now that you feel a certain way about hanging up all these dirty coats and Matt feels like he's thrown under the bus. I can't win.
No,
I can't. I need a W in this life.
I mean, you literally were, before you were sounding like very, like sort of, hot before when mm-hmm. you were sort of making my booty wiggle before with the way you were talking, and that's
yeah,
not like
yeah.
a win for you.
Okay,
the threesome, good.
The
you
threesome.
Had that. That was
you got
that's
that.
Cool.
That was cool.
Not every threesome is a
cool.
double,
cool.
and that's
is
a real
cool.
culture. It's real culture number 70. Not,
not
every
threesome
is cool,
is
a W.
It's a W.
Well, Celeste, any threesomes on in your past or on the horizon?
Yeah, I have had one.
Yeah.
Tell us.
In detail, including names.
I really feel that Bowen didn't share enough details. to
I agree.
Where I don't feel, I don't think, completely comfortable.
Okay. Matt, you didn't share details about yours.
Yeah.
You didn't ask. And by the way, I followed up with the people in said threesome. who listened to the episode
and
they
what did
said
they say?
No.
Bowen didn't really ask a question about it. And I was like, you know, he did it. And by the way, they also told me they're not having threesomes anymore. So I don't know if that's a comment on my abilities in said threesome. And I did follow up about that. I was like, I hope it's because I didn't fuck up. They said, no, no, no. We loved you. We just decided it wasn't for us for other reasons. And I was like, okay, great. And they were like, you're the best. We love you. And then I was like, great. So just know that's how that ended.
Wow.
And that's me sharing a lot of details.
And then they're going to listen to this episode.
And I'm sure there'll be a conversation about it. And they'll probably reassure me and be like, it wasn't you. We had a great time. And
yes,
I just want to clarify,
yes.
we did. And I did. Just raising my hand.
Everyone had a great time. And yet they decided it was
never again.
For them.
Yeah, they've decided never again.
I think that's okay. I don't think that says anything about you. I honestly don't think it says anything about you, Matt.
I don't think so either. But I did think it was funny.
Very funny.
I find
Very
it
funny.
Interesting that they sort of turn to put the blame on Bowen for not asking more questions.
Yeah.
That were feels they, like...
I'm sorry.
Well, it was funny because we literally... It was so funny because we brought it... I listened to it again and we brought it up and then Bowen was like, so the Friends reunion.
No, it's because you had already told me about the details in a one-on-one. Not every conversation needs to be for the readers. Do you know?
You're
understand?
So right, because they're mixed yeah. company.
It's mixed company. Okay, I mean, my review of this threesome is that it seemed like it was fun for all.
Good.
But I will say, I am also a little hung up on the fact that they were like, he didn't really ask a question. It's like, when the three of you were naked together, were the two of them playing to me? Excuse me?
No, it wasn't like that. It was just, I think that everyone involved was like, and that wasn't me, was like, huh, like it didn't seem that interesting to Bowen. And we should say it's because I told Bowen about it beforehand. In fact, pretty much right after it happened, because I was excited about it.
And was I not excited with you? I met you on your level and I was like,
he even FaceTimed
so
me about it with Joshua D. Sharp.
You didn't FaceTime me.
Yes.
After my season. No, you didn't.
Okay, well, first of all, I was running all about town. Look, this is about Celeste. Celeste,
this is
review your threesome now. Now, I said.
Without details.
It was good and then bad.
That sounds about right.
You know. Yeah.
And in a way that is general to all threesomes,
mm-hmm.
no matter the gender permutations.
Yeah, threesomes are good and then bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because ultimately, during a threesome experience, you run the risk of sort of two people enjoying it more than one other one.
For sure. Just on a numbers level.
Yeah.
The numbers are going to be against
you. Can't all three be on the same page. And that's why we are all fighting.
That's why we're all fighting.
That's why we're all fighting.
I mean, the triangle's never going to be equilateral. Mm-mm. Not even, you're lucky if it's isosceles, bitch. Because sure. Most of the time, you're dealing with scalene. No. Okay?
Equilateral triangles? More like the white rhino extinct.
Oh, my God.
Really sorry to bring that up, but this is a current events podcast. If we hadn't mentioned the white rhino's extinction, we would have heard about it. Thoughts on the extinction of the white rhino, Celeste? Yeah.
Well, I would hate for the people you had a threesome with to say that I did not say enough about that. And that's why I just want to come out clean and say, hey, that sucks.
What a shame, right?
What a shame.
Oh, I hate him. Upset.
Yeah.
Well, now answer the question about the white rhino. How do you feel?
On the extinction of the white rhino?
That's what I was talking about.
I thought you were talking about the threesome.
I have only positive feelings about Matt's threesome. I'd love to offline about it, FaceTime.
Thank you. You are family to me. Now, you'd say that you would categorize your feelings on the extinction of the white rhino as angered?
Angry. I said, I think upset.
Yeah, you said
upset. I think it's bad. That's my official statement. And if anybody listening wants me to say more, I will. Because I listen to feedback. It is important to me.
You do. You really do. You take in all feedback and you accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you
fight? Incorporate it.
Do you fight for animals?
I would say that I do
mm-hmm.
fight for animals to be happy and for Bowen to be happy.
Thank you. Thank
and
you.
For Matt to seem cool around me.
This is good. Wait, we have to talk about something. Fran Gillespie is a little bit, I think she's retiring a catchphrase that she was using, that I think now Celeste has adopted, which is,
I can't stop.
That'll be perfect for me. Just say it in some form. Like, if it's good, no matter what the context is, if it's something good or bad happens, if someone's like, we're so sorry, like, you don't qualify for this credit card, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be perfect for me. Well, sometimes, and this is actually just the truth, sometimes someone will think they have a catchphrase that's theirs. And then someone else will come along and sort of take that catchphrase. And guess what? The glove fits a little snugger on them. So
it's,
I think
what's an example.
You, I mean, this. Oh, for example, yes. It's like when Whitney Houston came along and sang "I Will Always Love You." Did she write the song, the tune? No, Dolly Parton did. But you can't say that that glove doesn't fit a little snugger on Ms. Houston's hand, mm-hmm. elegant wow. hand.
Wow.
And so I feel you. This is the same with you. Fran can sort of get fucked.
Oh my God.
Because looks like this catchphrase is fitting pretty well on you.
I want to start as many conflicts as possible.
Yeah,
in the time
clearly.
That I am here.
In the time
because conflict
here.
Is not abuse, you guys.
I was saying
that's
this to
huge.
Someone.
Title of EP. Conflict,
conflict
is not
abuse.
Abuse,
you guys.
You guys.
Did you, was there you guys in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it's
conflict
gendered.
Is not abuse, you guys.
I think it's time we ask Celeste the question.
High time.
High time. Celeste, what is the culture that made you say culture is for me? This is the culture that made you and your work and your life and your being move in a cultural direction.
Mm-hmm. Picture young Celeste, mm-hmm. sort of at a crossroads of culture.
Mm-hmm. Sort of in Toronto doing, I don't think.
were they at the show?
Were they not? That's the crossroads.
That is the crossroads.
Talk about the culture that founded you.
For me, and I'm so scared that somebody has already said this.
It doesn't matter.
That's just fine. Because the way that you say it is going to be different than them.
Yes.
It was the first script I ever laid eyes on.
Oh, beautiful.
It was Juno.
No one said it.
And actually, I really fucking appreciate it because, Matt, I've told you, and I've even probably said on the pod a million times, I'm like, I mean, there's a reason why that is an Oscar-winning screenplay. Like, yeah. That is actually, because the people who, like, just love to shit on Juno as a movie are like, oh, it's like, all like the slang
the point of view and incredible tone it had, and
Diablo Cody,
we love
icon, we love
beyond
love.
Talk about Juno.
This
talk
is
about
what this happened. My mom had seen it, I guess, at TIFF, at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Wow, okay, insider, had, industry insider.
Yeah, I've been kind of, I was sort of raised by the industry.
Right.
And she had seen it and she told me, like, I think you should watch it.
Your mom knew that you would like it?
Yeah, like she had recommended it to me. And
that's
then,
cool.
I guess at the time, I had just learned how to, like, torrent movies, but yes. I couldn't find the torrent for it.
What was your preferred platform, your preferred software?
LimeWire?
It was LimeWire. Yeah. Torrent on LimeWire. Great.
What were you, like, 10?
Yeah, I was sort of reaching high up to the family computer, kind of clacking away at LimeWire.
Your mom was like, you should find a way to watch this.
Yes. And it was, like, probably, like, had just premiered. Like, I didn't really know how, like, movie releases work. And so I was, like, trying to torrent it for weeks. And right. What year did it was probably like 2006. Right, yeah, 2007. And so I couldn't find the clip or like the movie itself, but I found the script.
Oh,
somehow.
Wow.
So you read the script like as if it were some sort of book.
Yeah, so I read it like over and over again.
Mm.
Had you already been into, like, plays at this time or theater? Like, did you already develop some? And that was, wow, I love that.
Not at all. Yeah. We are very much, like, a movie-watching household. But I didn't really, it wasn't my personality yet to, like, want to do that.
Got it. So then talk about what you, like, felt. Because I really love this for you, and it actually makes a lot of sense.
You think?
I think so. Yeah.
Say more about that.
It's like, it is a movie that is like just so tightly conceived, and it's about like,
no pun intended.
No, yeah.
Can
sure,
we
sure,
say?
Sure.
Whoa.
Can we say? It's. I just think it's like, I'm obsessed with that movie in a way that like, I don't think, I have not found that other people have, which I know is such a gross thing to say. I do feel like whenever I bring it up, I have to be like, I have to qualify it in such a way that it's like, I actually think it's a great movie, which I hate, and I should stop doing. I should stop doing that.
Can I say why I think that's true?
Yeah,
I think
the
reason why we have to qualify liking it is because, and I think I've said it on this podcast before, but that movie came out at a time when the Apatow comedies were all coming out, and it had Michael Cera. So when I went to go see it in high school, I went to go see it with all my male friends, mm-hmm. and they were all straight. And I had told them that I was really excited to see it because I felt it was going to be, I think I was really excited to see it for what it was. And I thought maybe it would be like a harder comedy than it was and not like a sweet, stylish, cool movie with a female protagonist like it was. And I think that my friends got angry with me because I had went so hard and wanted to go see it and they didn't connect to it. Mm-hmm, so I think that maybe, Bowen, at the time, that was a similar situation for you where it's just like,
but I was just...
We were still closeted when that came out, though.
Totally. But there was just... There was something about, like... I just watched it and I remember thinking, wow, okay. Like Elliot Page is, like, a star.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, put him in everything. And then it was just, like... I was thrilled when it won the Oscar. I was thrilled when Elliot was nominated. I was just, like... I was like, yeah, fuck you to the people who don't... There was just this, like... Am I crazy? Oh, Hans is saying something.
Everyone picks on the Hamburger Phone. I mean, the Hamburger Phone is it like lame?
She's a teenager. She's a teenager.
I think we can say the Hamburger Phone is a moment in the script where it's just like, okay, this is like, this character has a Hamburger Phone. And I think some people say this is like a twee bridge too far.
Yeah.
But not me. I'm not one of those people. I think Hamburger Phone is lovely.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like, I think, because of, like, the, like, you know, drawn kind of style of it, it's sort of, it is, like, quirky in this way. But to me, it was, like, so, the way it's written is, like, kind of not as a comedy, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. And, like, I think that was, like, exciting to me, if, like, because I draw to more, like, romantic stories and,
yes.
like... I think what was exciting about it was that, like, it's sort of like sneakily a comedy.
Sneakily a comedy.
It wasn't trying hard to crack you up mm-hmm. like all those Apatow movies were. Like, it wasn't mm-hmm. like Vince Vaughn improvising at us hard in
exactly.
a scene for 3 minutes straight. It was like, it
There's
was
no
a
winking.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I think I find like very upsetting. Is like, here it is. The laugh is coming. Get ready for it. It's here now.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And like the movie is like a very surprising story in its own way, where it's like I remember going in not knowing too much about it, and then like the whole Jason Bateman, like the whole story of Juno and like just hanging out with Jason Bateman's character is like, this is not what I expected, and then it plays out in a very bizarre way, and then mm-hmm. like I think clearly Elliot's the best part, but Jennifer Gardner is like the unsung, and the movie does not work without her, that performance
mm-hmm.
in a way. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like when she, like in that first scene when they meet and she's like, you found us in the Penny Saver? Like that, like those little moments like that are like kind of the keystones to the movie for me.
Completely. And it's like a blue collar story mm-hmm. and it's, you know, it's so... It's so, like, active, you know? Like, it's, like, this, like, young girl who's just, like, going out and doing all these things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's also why it's, like, it feels, like, gripping in this way. Like, you're scared for her the whole time. It's, like, a completely dangerous story.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I also think, like, it's funny. We bring up Jennifer Garner and obviously Elliot, like, because they're such a big part of it, and Jason Bateman, but even down to the tiny part, and Michael Cera we mentioned, but like Allison Jenny. Yeah, Allison,
yes,
she's
Allison
great.
Jenny's so good.
Allison
yes.
Jenny's so good. J.K. Simmons is
oh
so good in it. Like,
so
and the
sweet
whole,
in it.
You get the sense that the entire cast wanted to be a part of it because they read the script and they were like, I have to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm,
it, and it really does. They'll go back to the script, I think. And, so, and like, yes, like the performances are great. And I think that, You know that one of my favorite lines in the movie is when Jennifer Garner finds them and they're playing instruments and she goes, not to interrupt the jam session. But that was an improvised line. And like, I think that when a script is, as we said about last week with Mare of Easttown, when a script is so specific and you get the opportunity to get so specific with the characters, it allows the actors to get specific. And that's why all the performances are so good, because the script is so good and so specific. And I think that it sometimes gets boiled down to, oh, that's that script with the hamburger phone. But meanwhile, hamburger phone is like a funny specific that the character says because she has a hamburger phone. You know what I mean?
Hamburger phone. And like, who among us as teenagers didn't have some fucking stupid novelty thing in our rooms? Like,
yeah,
that I reject that completely, that people shitting on the hamburger, that actually sucks.
If you're
bothered by the hamburger phone in Juno, go to jail.
To jail
before we abolish prison.
Incarceration.
It really is, it's a thinly veiled like complaint, I think, about it being like a teenage girl speaking, you know?
I agree.
Like, just say that you hate teenage girls.
Yeah.
Just say that you hate teenage girls. Oh, you know what other great Jennifer Garner moment is in that movie is towards
Bowen
the end.
Like, Bowen stands Jennifer Garner in this movie.
She's so good.
She is Bowen's queen.
She's my queen, but she but at the end, like the last scene between that you see between her and Jason Bateman, where they get into the fight, and then he's just like, I need time. And then she's like, for what? To be a rock star? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, the way she delivers that, I'm like, Jesus. Christ, I remember the way it sounds.
Really good.
And I'm pretty sure this is improvised. It must be improvised, or it must have been Elliot's idea. But when Juno throws when they get into a fight and she runs out and she's just like, I listen to your Sonic Youth album and it's just noise. And like, that is such a funny line. I think it's a fantastic movie that does not get the credit. So good.
Really, really good. And you're right, there are so many. I haven't seen it in so long, but I was just trying to think of, you know,
that's
like sort
one.
Of young kind of media awakenings.
Yes. No.
And that was the only one that like I speak, you know, all of them are like fucking SNL things and whatever.
No,
that was
stop,
really
stop.
The like, I really think that was like the beginning.
That's good.
Yeah.
Celeste said, I was thinking of media awakenings, and then they go, hell, as if that wasn't the premise of this whole fucking show.
Yeah,
fucking
you're actually rude.
Yeah, I pretty much am a huge critic of this show, and have planted ideas all over the internet about why I think it should end.
Yes.
You know, like, it's actually interesting, like, this was like a weird triptych of Elliot Page performances early on that are so fucking good. And I actually think that
it was
Elliot
Juno.
Page doesn't really get the credit as an actor, because Hard Candy, Juno, and Sorry, Whip It. We have to put respect on Whippet's name, because Whippet is good. And Drew Barrymore was a great director. And
yes,
Kristen Wiig was great in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Marsha Gay was great in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Marsha Gay Harden was stunning in Whip It.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, I should watch that. I haven't
seen
that.
Whip It is good. And Juliette Lewis also turns it. Giving one of the most Juliette Lewis performances ever.
Juliette.
And to sort of bring it back to TIFF, I think I saw the premiere of that at TIFF. It was
that would
huge
make sense.
For me.
You were a TIFF kid, it seems.
Yeah, my I was God. Kind of on the scene at TIFF.
Could you imagine going to a film festival as a child, Matt?
I can. I don't have that. I don't have that ability to imagine that, being raised by the industry.
My life would have turned out so much better if I had gone to this film.
Truly can't imagine being a child at 10 that could go on try to torrent things either.
This new generation.
But Gen Z's in the chat, so you know.
everyone in Gen Z has been to TIFF or Telluride or any of the big festivals.
Yeah, they just give them out to Gen Z like industry passes.
God, I didn't grow up with this.
You know, also I'm also remembering now, just to hop back to Juno, because you know who else's favorite movie this is Jared. And so he had on Shuffle like a couple weeks ago, like And I guess the soundtrack to Juno was playing, and it was
soundtrack.
Don't see what anyone could see with anyone else but you. That song is so sweet, and it ends so sweet. I remember at the time when I was like 16, 17 watching it, it was ending like that, and a huge part of me was loving it, and all my straight friends were like, fuck is this song, dude? God. Why are we listening to this song, dude? Why is Michael Cera singing, dude?
Ew.
Sorry. It had such a good soundtrack.
It's all so the young dudes.
So good.
Cat Power, I think, was on that.
Sea of Love, Cat Power is on that. Yeah. That's a great Cat Power cover.
Did you know this was Roger Ebert's number one movie of the year, 2007?
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's what also the impact of it was like taking indie movies like seriously.
Yeah. And it was a movie about a teenage girl that people were like, hey, this is, and they never, because they never say this. They're never like, this is good and worthy of awards consideration and like, you know, one of the best of the year. It feels like if a movie is ever about like teenage girls, they kind of like, it has to get its credit later. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like people only notice that Clueless is a fucking A+ script for all time
years later.
People only talk about Mean Girls as a prestige comedy script about teen girls years later. It felt like this was a weird exception to that rule.
Totally.
But, and yet it was still, I mean, the reason where I hate that we're, I kind of hate that I brought into the discussion that like, oh, people seem to really dislike it when that doesn't have to be part of the legacy of Juno. So I'm sorry for bringing that into the conversation as soon as Celeste was like, my thing is Juno. And I was like, oh, isn't it so awful that like people don't like except us?
No, but I think you're reacting to something that's real, which is, I mean, there's a lot of things. But that, I think but it's a lot of patriarchy. Right. It's a lot of patriarchy involved with this movie. That's about
teen girls get like fucking relegated to like some like lower status or something in terms of.
I think what I'm saying is I'm not surprised to hear you say that, Bowen, because I think the patriarchy has affected us vis-a-vis this movie more than we realize.
Yes.
Because we were at a weird age when it came out, because we were sort of trying to figure it out in that way. Does that make sense?
Makes total sense. I'm a bad Diablo Cody fan, though, because I've never seen Jennifer's Body.
Oh, Jennifer's Body is one of my favorite movies of hers. And we have to get Diablo on the pod, I just realized. And one thing I want to do is look her in the eyes and say, Jennifer's Body deserved more.
Mm-hmm.
Celeste, do you stand Jennifer's Body?
Yeah, it's good.
It's so good, except there's one part of it I don't like, which is when they have that weird sex scene.
Yeah, I really watched that movie at like a boy girl like party in the basement, and it was supposed to
be horny.
I was sweating so much, and my like ass was like touching this like boy's ass, and like I just like remember feeling warm. For like many reasons.
Warm
so
ass.
So all I really feel is that when I hear Jennifer's Body, but Bowen, I think you should watch.
Okay, and can I ask, the sex scene is gay?
It's between Megan Fox, who's great in it, and Amanda Seyfried. And basically, like, it feels like it was sort of put in there by the studio. It just feels like there was no real hint or intimation that they'd be interested in doing something like this. It felt like something that was a symptom of Megan Fox being in the movie and some dudes that were involved were like, hey, we have to put this in there. It kind of felt like that.
And so
I'd be interested to ask the question, to be honest. But because I think the movie is so good and interesting and actually scary and funny as shit. And I think that, again, because it was about teen girls, it didn't get taken seriously as like the sort of like conscious pulp it was trying to be. Like I sometimes feel like boy movies get to be knowingly pulp and like quote unquote girl movies like don't get to be. They're like tossed out. And like, you know, Jennifer's Body was a quote unquote flop, but it was funny and good, and I don't know.
A bit gross. Like, girl movies get to be gross, you know?
Right.
And Juno kind of has that same, I think, stink on it. It's a bit yuck.
Yeah.
She also, another movie that Diablo Cody wrote, which I think didn't get the credit either, is Young Adult.
So good.
Yeah.
Genius movie.
Oh, and genius. That, that's, and that is like as unlikable of a protagonist as you can write into a movie like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I saw that or not.
Oh, also Celeste, that's a good Jason one. Ryan, and I think it's Charlize's best.
Yes, wait, and I was thinking of, well, when you said it, I was thinking of Tully.
Yeah.
Which is also really good. Did you see that?
Was that Diablo 2?
Really good. It was. Yeah. And like, wow. So, again, like kind of secretly a comedy.
Definitely.
Secretly a comedy.
It, but like never trying to be funny. Just like it puts the characters in situations that feel so real that it's funny. But and it's definitely, I mean, it's categorized on at least Wikipedia as a comedy drama film. But it takes a really interesting turn. And totally. It's again, it's Charlize who's stunning and Mackenzie Davis.
Totally. Oh, I think that also like that, like I'm just kind of thinking more about this influence in my own life. I really do feel like often, and I really don't know where it comes from, but like a lot of shame about liking comedy and being associated with comedy and like wanting to do it. And I don't know what it is.
Well, so let's try and unpack it.
Well, do you guys feel this way at all?
Always.
No.
Always. No, Matt's lying.
Really?
No, I don't feel guilt about doing this. I will say this.
Not
I
guilt, think shame.
Shame?
Shame.
I used to not say I was a comedian because I thought that sounded presumptuous. And I thought, I still to this day have a hard time getting out the words like, I'm a comedian. Because I think that means that you think you're funny. And I guess like there's something untoward about saying that.
Mm-hmm. Completely. But
I am someone who lives their life doing it. So probably I should be able to say it.
Yeah. So also just not to editorialize, but yes, you do feel shame. It sounds like.
Yeah, maybe you're right. So, but you're able to say right away that you feel shame doing it. What is that?
For me, it's that working in a place like SNL where everyone is able to evaluate you on a granular level, whether or not you have you are funny, because what happens, at least with SNL or with most comedies, it's like it's sink or swim no matter what. It's like either the audience thinks, either one person thinks you're funny or that you're not. Completely, almost always a binary thing. And then they let you know either way. And then the fact that people are so quick to evaluate that and then tell me feels like feels too available. It feels
so
like...
So your shame has to do it completely... It is completely placed in everyone else.
No. But my shame has to do with like... Sorry. My shame has to do with people... being able to like, in some way, yeah. My shame has to do with people like thinking that they can decide for me whether or not I am good at this, and they can't, and they don't, and like I don't. For the most part, it doesn't affect me, but sometimes it does, and the shame kind of grows from there, from like the thought that like, oh, this person doesn't think I'm funny. Do I care? And if the answer is kind of yes, then that's when I start to feel shame.
Hmm.
Yeah, it is like a high risk, high reward kind of situation always, like in trying to make somebody laugh. Because if you try to be funny and you are not funny, then there's nothing that's more degrading than that feeling.
Yes.
But if you try to be funny and you make a bunch of people laugh, there is truly your God.
Your God.
There's no higher feeling than that.
I mean, this is like the shitty part of working at SNL, which is, and like, it took me a while to realize that everyone feels this way. Every person at that place has felt this way. Who has ever worked there has felt this way, which is like, if you like have a thing go badly at table read, then the thought that you end up at the terminus is everyone thinks I'm a bad person. Everyone here thinks I'm a bad person and they don't like me and they never liked me. It's like, the shame, failure is a seed crystal. Failure in like a single moment is a seed crystal that blossoms into this like crazy lattice of like, oh my God, I'm a bad person.
That's the crazy thing about it too, though, is that I feel like that like danger of, oh, is this going to make someone laugh or is this going to be the worst moment of my life is true even of even in the lowest circumstances. Like at a show with seven people, like it feels like a life or death. It's high risk, high reward all the time. And I think that feeling is I don't know. Like it's built in for me. Like I never felt proud of like being in pursuit of comedy and don't feel particularly proud or like, you know, able to be honest about being like in comedy and like a comedy writer. Like that always feels like hell. And I don't, and I think it's tied to that, but I kind of still don't really understand why.
Well, is it fair for me to say that your success has happened quickly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that might have to do with
the email Bowen read of me, sort of kind of groveling. Was sort of
three years ago.
No, I don't feel you groveled. I think you sent back a nice email. Thanks. And wait, this is a thing. I feel like though, it's like you do feel shame when you're beating up on yourself.
Completely. This is helpful for me.
And Matt, you're saying like you feel shame when you beat up on yourself because
you don't want me to be your doctor. You don't want me to be your lawyer. I can't do anything else. What I can do is be a clown in the square. Like I'm good at that. and so are you both to the highest level.
Celeste, I gas them up all the fucking time. Mm-hmm. But I think Celeste should be very proud of the season they had.
You did so well. I mean, for a first-year writer, that certainly was not
even
the story
for
I was hearing from the girls.
Not even for a first... Take for a first-year writer out of it. It's like...
Yeah.
Someone who, like, immediately made connections with people in meaningful ways, who knew how to work well in different environments with different people. Like, it was just, like, awe-inspiring in a way that I was just like, wow. And, like, all of us were just like, this is incredible. God bless.
Wow.
Anyway... Wait, talk about this. Let me go back to Juno really quickly. Talk about Juno. Was it a quick ignition when you saw Juno that you're like, I want to do this kind of thing where I want to write?
Well, I think it was reading the script and then seeing it and feeling moved by the movie in the way that I felt moved by the script that made me understand like, okay, these things are connected. Something's going on here.
Yes.
And I think I like really like connected to that translation.
Yes. Was there a moment that any of you remember where you were first conscious of who was writing something that you enjoyed? Like where you were paying attention to the credits in a way that was meaningful. For me, I think that was like, and this is such a basic answer, but I think it was Mean Girls. Where I was like watching SNL so much, and I was like just like excited by the fact that Tina Fey was writing this movie, and I was just like, oh, and she wrote this, and it's got Lindsay Lohan. It's like I like all of it appealed to me in a way, and then like it was meaningful to me that it was like, oh, she wrote this, and she's behind all of these jokes and the story and the way that like things happen, and this is all like through one person. What about do you remember?
For me, it was the first time I ever realized that it could be a job you could have. Of course, I understood that people wrote movies and television shows. But the first time I ever thought, oh, wait, that's a job I would like to do, is when I was watching Lost. Like, I remember there was a scene where it was episode 6 of season 1. It was called House of the Rising Sun. It was with Sun and Jin. And I remember there was a scene at the end of the episode, and it was Sun was going to leave Jin at the airport. And she was walking towards the car that she had arranged to be there. And she turns over her shoulder, and Jin, Daniel Dae Kim, the hottest man in the world, lifts up a flower. Like it's like an orchid or something, like Sun's favorite flower. And then Yunjin Kim, who played Sun, turned around, and you can see in her eyes, she makes the decision to stay. And then they get on the plane and they crash on the island. Fate. And I was just like, and it that was like a flashback. And I loved the flashback device of that first season of the show. And, you know, it's such a good first season of television, especially for someone who's 14. But I remember after that episode ended, I was like, God, that was so good. And next week there's going to be another one, and I'm going to find out more about these characters. And that's when I was like, you know, realizing like, and I would like to be a part of making that. Like that was one that was when it was everything. It was the writing, it was the directing, it was the acting, it was the music. And I just remember being like, oh, I want to be a part of making television or making this movie, TV, whatever, because I'm getting, it's clicking for me that it can be created. For some reason I was like that child that watched everything as if it was in a vacuum, like movies were just this magical thing or whatever. And that was the first show where it like clicked for me. And I did start to note like who was creating television shows, and I would look up interviews with like whoever was the creator of the show or the writer of particular episodes, to the point where when I got to college, I was like what I was studying. And I was particularly looking at like, you know, who I looked up to the most. What about you, Celeste?
What about you, Celeste?
For me, it was at the Oscars, some years during this like screenwriting awards, it would be like a clip from the movie and yes. the script would be, it would be like yes. interior. Yes, nice. Bedroom. She walks in and places
those type a hand. Are horny.
They're extremely horny, and yeah. I really think are smart. Like demystify the process a yes. little bit of page to stage.
Yes,
in a way that I found extremely inspiring and like, and again, it's that control. It's that control of like the movement from the script to the screen. It's like, okay, there's something in that, like in between it being typed out like on your little computer and then seeing it physically, like materially. It's, I think that's really exciting.
Ooh,
and I find that kind of actually exciting at SNL too.
It is kind of, you know what? Did I tell you guys this, either of you?
Cool.
The fact that I got stoned and watched Pretend It's a City in January in my bed, and then I told myself, I'm going to play her on Update.
Yeah.
And then it happened. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that makes me horny for not for myself, but just for that process, right? Of like,
yeah.
oh my God, it can happen that way.
Yeah.
It, like, and aren't I so lucky that I have that available to me? And isn't every writer who works and who's working right now, like, aren't they so lucky? And like, I don't know. I think it's
totally.
Beautiful.
There was like, Bowen, you remember years ago when I did that Star Wars sketch for Above Average?
Yes, yes.
Like, that was a moment where I had that, where I was like, they will never put me in Star Wars, but I will put myself in a Star Wars adjacent sketch.
Yes.
Where
yes.
I will get to fight with a lightsaber. And it was just, and then I got to, and then I was watching it and I was like, oh, I fought with a lightsaber. The sketch is called We Meet Again.
and you did that and you wrote that.
Yeah, it was cool. Like that. Well, that was something I discovered like doing sketch in college too. It was like, oh, you can do anything you want if you write mm-hmm, it.
Mm-hmm, yes, mm-hmm. It's cool. It's horny.
Yeah,
it's
horny.
It's romantic where you're like, I kind of am a little bit curious about that. Mm-hmm. I have like a little idea about that. And then it happens. Like, it's like, it feels so good.
Yeah. Oh, I love this.
That is horny. We're all really horny right now hearing it.
About writing.
I think so. About how the Oscars production seeped into my little child brain.
What are you watching or have you watched recently that you're like horny for the writing of?
Oh, shit. All I'm watching right now is Top Chef. And I
Which
do
is
wonder
valid.
What the writing of, what like who writes what Padma what's the writing process? Do we
what's
know?
What's the writing process? Do we know?
They must have writers.
I think that if they don't have a room, they definitely have like contributing producers who are like, here's an idea for a bit. And yeah. then you know what? They probably do have, what we had on Hot Dog was we had Neil Casey. And,
oh, funniest person.
And also Nicole Thurman. So they were they were writing it together. So shows like that do have like comedy writers that come up with the funny
yeah,
stuff that Padma
I'm
says.
Sure.
Not to say that Padma isn't coming up with whiz bangs of her own.
Oh, she is a writer. She writes the show. The way that she keeps the show running of, you know, now let's go to judge's table. At judge's table, we'll be talking. Like, she is, that's plodding, you know?
The way that you're getting right now, you are a Padmaholic.
I love Padma.
I love
Padma. I love her and I appreciate what she has done for me.
She has done it all. And mm-hmm. Taste the Nation, too, and her Hulu docuseries. You can tell she is like the guiding hand in that. Especially, I think in the writing too. Like, a lot of it is very like it's like a prose poem that she's narrating, and it's like she must have written this in some fashion. Padma is a writer.
I just think that she's so good at what she does
excellent.
That it comes out like poetry. It flows.
Well, I mean, when she was on this show, she was talking about the book of spices that she wrote. You know, she wrote a book that has like every spice in the world. And she has, it's like essentially like a glossary that she wrote of spices. And she was like, because didn't she mention that she has like an experienced palate or something? Or like a super palate?
She has a super advanced palate that's like genetically gifted in some sense.
Like a savant for tasting food.
Oh, that honestly must be why they have that challenge every season of like the smelling of the different spices. You know, they blindfold them and they like give them like, you know, 30 ingredients and you can only use the ones that you get right. And she like you can see the sparkle in her eye when they're doing the little tasks that she likes.
The little tasks.
She has favorites. That she likes.
If you're Padma's favorite.
That's huge. Huge. Are you liking the new season?
It's good. It's really good. Are you guys watching?
I hear this is a good one. I'm not watching, but I hear this is a great one.
Good. I was just talking to Suda Green about there's this episode where they did like a drive-in theater because it's all COVID. Restrictions. And they do an episode where they're like they're like at a drive-in and the chefs have to make like kind of drive-in movie-friendly snacks. And to introduce each, the competition was to make a food for different genres of film. And to introduce each genre, Padma does a little, I'm going to go ahead and call them sketches. She does a sketch for each genre and she is loving it.
A sketch actress.
She, Han says, it's wonderful. It's the first season that isn't centered on the Caucasian palate.
The Western palate.
Okay. Or the Western palate.
Huge. Okay, it's huge. I'm going to start tonight.
It's an important season.
Yeah, it's important.
As if every Top Chef season was not important.
It's Portland, right?
Yeah.
So Gregory's around a bunch.
Oh, yeah, he around. Yeah. And he cute.
The best.
And Kwame's around, and he is cool and hot. And Melissa is
hot. So is this the gag is that all the kind of iconic contestants of yesteryear are all sort of judges now?
Yes. Yes.
Han says two Asian lesbians.
Kristen is there too, honey.
Yeah, and I'm gonna address this. Readers, I do keep having a moment with my internet that it drops in and out. And this is truly, this is how you know that just like Top Chef, we are COVID too. Because,
COVID.
It's really getting me going for my, I don't think so, honey, because I was gonna do it on Wiggly Bottoms. And if Spectrum Internet is gonna make me do it on them, then that's gonna be the way it is. Because the fact of the matter is, this is all Spectrum's fault. Because Verizon, you don't get this. Verizon Fios, you don't get this drama.
Yeah. The people have to know where we are at, and it is that we are all a little bit stressed about technology, and I do think it's the undercurrent of this episode.
Let's do a check-in. Bowen, how are you feeling? I feel okay. This is actually a little scary for me because I'm staring at my Spectrum router and I'm like, this will turn on me someday very soon. And I'm not looking forward to that. And I actually want to. I had the worst experience of my life. That was a dark day when I had just moved. I'd moved into this apartment on April 21st, exhausted by that day because it was raining outside. It was a terrible day to move. To the 22nd, I go back in to shoot stuff all day. And then the 23rd, I had to go and make sure my Wi-Fi was set up in my house because I had to do a bunch of stuff in my house.
No.
And then went to the Spectrum place. Sat there for an hour and a half because there was two people working and none of them knew what they were doing. And it was not their fault. It was just like Spectrum as a company is bad and does not set their employees up to do their jobs well. And so it's like, I think Spectrum as a company is, as pernicious as they come.
It's as I was going to say as pernicious as they come. I literally was. And also, I want to say something. I want to sort of just cut through because Celeste, you asked Bowen how he's feeling. And so I'm just going to offer how I'm feeling.
No, I was going to go to you next. Matt, how are you feeling?
I could tell. I know what it's like to be on a Zoom and one person is having the technical issues. And I know that regardless of the fact that it has nothing to do with me as a person, that people on the Zoom feel irritated with that person. And
it's
makes me upset. It makes me upset. because I don't want to be the person bringing tension to the Zoom, but I know that this constant like give and take of my internet is I can hear in Bowen's voice driving him crazy.
It just takes me out of this conversational sort of cadence that we have.
I know, and I have nothing to do with it.
We've had to field so many things. No, it's okay. We've all been, everybody has been that person. And in fact, everyone's, I think it was me at the beginning. Remember, guys?
No.
You remember.
You've only been a shining, you've only been a shining example of excellence in this podcast episode.
We need to check in with Celeste. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
I'm feeling good because it was me in the beginning, and that's okay. And you don't have to protect me anymore. I am strong.
I just want to protect you because I know that you're Gen Z. You're coming up in comedy, and the rise has been meteoric. And I see the wolves. Bowen and I know about the wolves.
The wolves are out to hunt.
I don't want the wolves to sort of come for you. And so that's why I feel very protective of you, Celeste, because you're someone that I saw on that stage in Toronto. And I knew from then on, I was like, that's my baby. Mm-hmm.
And the wolves better not take my baby. Mm-hmm.
If the wolves took my baby, I'd be so upset. I'd be like Meryl Streep in that movie.
What movie?
The Cry in the Dark.
Oh.
Remember the dingo ate her baby? And they were like, no, you killed the baby. And she was like, I swear to God, the dingo ate my baby. And there's a famous scene where she says, the dingo ate my baby. And can you imagine just reading that script and being like, yeah, let me do this. And then not only doing it, but earning an Oscar nomination.
I can't.
I know you can't. I think you're so talented. I don't think you're Meryl Streep.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
Thank you. And that shows me that you respect me to hear that. A statement so cutting and so true.
I think, it's not even cutting, it's just respectful to say the truth.
It is.
I think that you are Celeste. Meryl is Meryl.
There we go. There it is. I think it's time to move on to I Don't Think So, Honey.
I think it's time to move on to I Don't Think So, Honey.
Yeah.
We can tell when Bowen has had it.
Yeah, he has had it.
This is what's going on.
Bowen.
What?
Is that these two people are on the... Usually how it is these... No. Right now is...
These two people.
I'm so tired because guess what? It's 3 hours later here. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. 9:45 p.m.
where Bowen 9:45 p.m.
Celeste and I checked in yesterday. We were both still in the sort of energy upswing of the SNL postseason.
Right.
I'm still recovering, downloading myself again. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Like rebooting the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And trust me, I went to Disneyland yesterday.
You did.
So you have to understand, I know what my I Don't Think So Honey is.
Oh my God.
Okay. It just clicked.
Sorry, but I just wanted to say that like I'm not tired. I'm just like a little like
you're amped. Spent. It's like that thing of the season ended and you said, great, now I can relax. And the mistake you probably made was by relaxing, you meant hang out with friends, socialize, download. But that is energy expense.
Yes.
It's hard. I am so tired.
I know.
Every conversation is uphill for me.
Labored.
Right when now. Will you be back in New York? Celeste?
Soon. In a week.
Great. I'll see you You'll every day. When I see you there, I'll see you every day.
Yes.
And Bowen knows I don't really let him relax. Because even when we're just hanging out, just the two of us, it's sort of Bowen sitting down and me up, like kind of sort of like bouncing around the apartment. He knows it's true. Look at him smiling.
It's golden retriever and like cat energy.
Let's watch Juno.
The best pair.
I would love to watch Juno all together.
You know who else would love Sued?
Yes.
Sudie would love to. Let's do that.
Soupy. Oh, you call her Soupy too?
Soupy, yes.
I got it from 80 and I like it.
Oh, 80.
Cute.
I do feel like Celeste is like in the family, you know?
Oh. We welcome you.
That is so nice.
but I mean this in the way that like, I sometimes am just witnessing Sudie and Celeste have little moments like where I don't figure into it at all, where I'm like, That's beautiful.
Come here, darling.
I love her.
Let us care for you. Welcome to the family.
Thank you.
Celeste.
That's beautiful. Okay, this is I don't
really
think so, honey.
Nice.
Really nice. This is I don't think so, honey. This is where we take 1 minute.
Bowen
to
is
go
doing
off.
Padma.
On something in culture, we're moving on to
Bowen says,
so,
let's
honey.
Go to judge's
Bowen is
table.
Doing friend of the show, Padma. Bowen's gonna, I don't think so, honey, Padma.
No,
and
no.
We're gonna play it for her.
No.
No, we literally do think so, Padma, so hard.
We love Padma. We do think so, honey, Padma. This is, no, Matt has a topic prepared.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, this is Matt Rogers' I don't think so, honey. It's Disneyland kind of moved you in a new direction, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is Matt Rogers' I don't think so, honey. His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. The Avengers campus at Disneyland California Adventure. Oh. It opened last weekend. I went, how come you have to get on a 5-hour wait to get into this damn thing, to even get into
Disneyland.
The land? And then when you get into the land, which I didn't, all they have is a Spider-Man web slingers attraction, which is basically you shoot webs at a screen, which is again a video game, not a ride. I don't think so, honey. These major theme park attractions that are video games, not rides. I don't think so, honey. Also,
seconds.
I don't think so, honey. In order to even get on the web slingers, you have to wake up at 6:59 a.m. to get on at 7 a.m. on the app, and you have to, within 15 seconds, make yourself a reservation for the ride. And if you don't get it, well, honey, you're SOL. Shit out
seconds.
Of luck for the rest of the day. I don't think so, honey. I did watch from the outside Spider-Man leap in the air. That was cute. But you can't even get on Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout
seconds.
Without getting into Avengers Campus. I don't think so, honey. That. I don't think so, honey. The whole thing, it's too complicated. One, no.
And that's 1 minute. I am so sorry to hear about this.
Yes.
Bowen, and that's why I'm going again tomorrow.
Matt, hold on. We need to sort of start the revolution and say no to reservation culture, to like between hearing about Avengers Campus and about you having to wake up and get on a 5-hour release. And then this is what Rise of the Resistance was
that's
when Star Wars.
I will say I did do Rise of the Resistance the other day and it was stunning. And Rise of the Resistance, it ties the
of
whole
course.
Land together. And Bowen Yang, I'm excited to get you on it. New guy.
Okay, great. But I'm just saying, between that, between like fucking all these Pride events tickets being like kind of whipped up within 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Fucking Coachella. I'm seeing my friends try to get Coachella 2022 tickets. I'm like, guys, there must
Wolf
be a better
wine,
way.
Winery.
Wolf for wineries.
Oh, heard all about it.
We talked about it on this very podcast. The concept of debasing yourself, humiliating yourself in order to get into a thing that will almost never live up to the fantasy. The experience of it will never live up to the fantasy. Is suffering is pure pathology. It's like it's actually something that humans should try to pull away from. We should avoid this.
I just can't tell you how demoralizing it is to...
Because it's just by design.
Yeah.
It's meant to make you want to go even... That's why you're going back again tomorrow.
I have no reference for what at all you are talking about.
Celeste, let me ask you a question. Yeah. If you were to buy tickets to an amusement park,
is
what would you expect? You go in, and if you want to get on a ride, you get online for that, right?
Yeah.
That's not how it works. You have to imagine it was 2 hours before you get there. You have to download an app, and within 10 seconds of the minute it opens, you have to log on to get on, make a reservation for that ride. And if you don't, you're SOL shit out of luck.
Oh, SOL shit out of luck.
Out of luck.
You mean... Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm incensed. I am.
I'm incensed.
I just think we gotta do this. We just gotta not do this. We gotta not.
Just democratize.
Oh, This is the thing. We have to take back control as the consumer. We will not be consumed. Matt, you will not go to Disneyland. I assume you're going there. But I don't want, as soon as you set foot on the grounds, you understand that you are a consumer.
And I've always known that, but they just make it so obvious now that it's like, we don't really care.
Right.
And that is the kind of like just, that inhuman, that apathetic quality to like the to like that kind of thing, to everything, to like from like, I don't know why I keep thinking about Coachella, but I was just talking to someone about, and they were like stressed out about Coachella tickets. I was like, I'm so sorry, but you don't have to worry about that. Like there's a world in which you don't care, which I know is like oversimplifying it, but it's like, there's a world in which you don't have to go, you know? Like,
yeah.
But also, I thought like that the kind of the whole thing, the whole kind of gift of, you know, selling ourselves and dignity to fucking like Disney was like being taken care of and knowing that it was fake,
exactly.
But being taken care of anyways. It's like, at the very least, I want to just pretend. Fake it.
That I'm a child.
For me. Yes.
I felt this experience years ago when we went, and Rise of the Resistance was like fully unhinged. And I was like,
unhinged.
This is actually not good for anyone. Like, I don't understand why this is part. Like, it's just not well.
And then the you know what? They also have the gall to be like, in the promotion of it all, be like, this is a can't miss. If you miss this, you'll be talking about how bad you feel for decades. If you miss this after you paid up your ass to come here, you are SOL.
You're S.
Shit.
Out of luck.
Girls.
All right. That was beautiful. Thank you, Matt.
I don't like to be service. Mad at my girls, the Disney Corporation.
Yeah. No,
I don't
no.
think so, honey.
That was long for. I don't think so, honey, says Celeste, who, by the way, Celeste will read you down. That is another thing about Celeste, is they will read you down and they will not even. It'll be a thing of like, it happens. And then you'll walk away and be like, I just got read down.
You go, oh my god.
You go, oh my god.
They just read me down.
They just read me.
I am having a little bit of a down. Like somebody I'm visiting, kind of old friend, like college friends, and a few of my New York friends are in town. And I think that they have sort of like in the past couple of days like understood why is I'm like constantly roasting. Like,
yeah,
you are.
Why?
Because
why do you roast?
Because my friends from Toronto are like almost as sport, like constantly. Just like, if you speak, you are a fucking idiot.
Yeah, you were raised in a rough and tumble environment.
Yes, if you are not roasting, if your mouth is closed, you are getting stomped on.
Dog eat dog.
You sort of have to be keeping up with the rhythm. It's the ball's in the air.
Well, yeah. You made me like that.
Yeah.
That's so what I'm saying.
Made
Matt like
that? It's an influence.
Yeah, because since I met you in Toronto when you stormed the stage and stole the show, you started bullying me.
You have made enemies. Right?
And this is also something I remember, is you started bullying me.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've bullied me ever since. And
right.
Now backstage. Now I'm like, I have this edge I never had.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
And yeah. It causes you to be industry Matt.
Yeah.
I kind of think that's my influence. Yeah, most people know me as sort of a mean person.
No, that's good.
You
that's
are good. Sweet.
You know who's? You know who else is a mean person?
Who?
Sudi Green.
Oh,
cruelty down.
The
you know
biggest
what? You know,
bitch I have ever met.
One of the first things. One of the earliest things I remember her saying is that she loved Mad Men because Mad Men quote understands that human life is suffering end quote. She was 19. She said, this show understands that human life is suffering. She was 19 years old. Her whole life was ahead of her. She said that. She also, I showed her the show X Factor, and she said, look how many Pepsi cans there are. Look how there's so many Pepsi cans, and they pan up this girl's body. And I was like, oh my God, this girl is so, she's so jaded and smart.
She's going to be mad that I'm revealing this, but at one point she wrote a game show sketch for read through. And the theme was like, it was like a game show sketch about like bachelorette parties. And then there was just one specific joke. I forget what the context was, but it was like, do you like do something blah, blah, blah with your, with the bachelorette, with the bridal party where three of them are like full on fucking nobodies. Are full on nothing. No, three full nothings in the bridal party. And I'm like, oh My God.
There was an Abby Huntsman joke in a View parody that went, but this joke was cut because I believe Lauren said it was too mean.
Lauren said it was too mean. and he was right in that. In that instance, because it was actually very mean.
There is an endless, it's infinite with her. Like, she'll just be speaking and she'll just say something like, yeah, she's a bento box mom, aka doesn't work.
What?
Just, I'm like, what are you talking
what
about?
Does that mean?
It's knives in every direction. AKA doesn't work.
AKA doesn't work.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
No one is safe.
Bento box mom.
Mom.
Unbelievable.
Bento box mom.
She'll return soon. We're doing an in-person episode with Sudie Green. It is yet to be scheduled, but it will be Summer of Cunt 4.
Summer of Cunt 4.
And it will be a wonderful episode upcoming. Everyone's eagerly awaiting the return of Sudie. But for now, we will have Bowen Yang. So I don't think so, honey. Bowen, have you sort of marinated and decided on a topic as a result of said marination?
I have decided. Yes, yes, I've decided.
Marination?
Yeah.
Marination. Yeah. All right. This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. Time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Sunsets. Why are you giving us consistency in the color palette, you fucking bitch? We know what colors work. It's blues, it's violets, it's pinks. Don't experiment. Don't give us different eras and do like grays and blues. There's a universally agreed upon color palette for sunsets that works. And I don't care that it's the clouds. I don't care that it depends on like the tilt of the earth or the seasonality of the sunset. Give us the same colors every single night. Every crepuscule. No, that's the dawn. Every twilight, give us the same colors. Otherwise, I don't want to see it.
15
I
seconds.
Want you to be someone who does the work and does it predictably. I think predictability is underrated.
Like Jennifer Garner, 5 seconds.
Oh, I wasn't bringing Jennifer Garner into this, but you have to give us something consistent at sunset.
That's 1 minute.
Wow.
So you have a problem with sunsets, which are true verse. Sunsets can give you all sorts of different varieties,
I want
colors.
One
you want
color
one
story.
And which one would you like the most?
Blue, violet, pink.
So sort of like a Fire Island. No, not even Fire Island. You don't want a Fire Island sunset.
Some Fire Island sunsets, it's going to be blue, violet, pink. I want...
they're mostly yellow, orange.
I don't want orange. I don't want warm tones. I don't want warm tones in my scent.
Horrible. And guess what? Not for nothing, but Lion King found dead.
Yes.
Yeah. Minkoff found dead.
Rob Minkoff. AKA husband of Crystal Kung Minkoff, our new favorite Housewives of Beverly Hills cast member.
Oh my God.
Found dead.
Shirley Temples found dead.
Duh.
This is controversial, I feel, very much.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't care.
It's literally colorist.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yes.
I don't care.
Your color isn't showing, Bo.
You better care. Yes.
I don't know. I don't think so, honey.
Excuse me. I believe the lyrics are, have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon? Wait, what's the part about sunsets in that song?
I don't think there is a part about sunsets in that song.
Oh, that's a shame. Feels like a good opportunity to mention sunsets and the colors of the wind. Maybe it's just because it's called Colors of the Wind.
Colors of the Wind.
Okay, so
sunset.
Majority of the Colors of the Wind
Stephen
found
Schwartz
dead.
Found dead. I said Stephen Schwartz found dead.
Colors of the Wind. Bowen said more like two colors of it.
I'm finding it hard to even, you know, find a foothold
in
what you have said.
There's nothing. Because you know what happened? He didn't have one and then thought of that.
But he's
so talented.
This week,
he made it a community
force. This week,
we'll get 500,000 likes.
This week, I said, I will come prepared with a topic. And I thought, and it came to me, it was immaculate, the conception. I thought, it'll be sunsets, it'll be consistent, give us consistency, give us the same color story. I don't want to see a different color.
So
he compared himself to Mother
Mary. In
he
your perfect world, the
Mary.
Sunset looks the same every night.
Yes, yes.
What?
Yeah,
going
and it's like an
on?
Arctic. It's like an Arctic sunset.
It's like a blue,
cold.
You guys are acting like I'm crazy. I don't appreciate that.
You guys are acting like I'm crazy.
I'm crazy.
What does that
you
tell
are.
You?
Mm-hmm. You are.
Maybe people act like you're crazy around you because you're crazy. Some mm-hmm. things are. Some things. It's not
such a high school sophomore thing to say. I don't want to do this.
If you don't want to do this, you are SOL. Bowen. Shit out of luck.
Good. Shit sweetie. Out of luck, sweetie.
Is SOL, parentheses, shit out of luck, a good title for the app?
Yes. Yes.
Is it good?
I love it.
Well.
It's really good.
What's a good title for what's about to happen? Is okay. Celeste Yim's I don't think so, honey.
Okay, wait. I really could have prepared. I can't believe I spent so long putting the towels up.
Okay. Wow. Less towels, more content.
I think I've got
next
it.
Next time. All okay. right. So Celeste, who is now, I don't think so, honey, royalty, because this is, of course, not the first, not the second, the third canonical time Celeste has done, I don't think so, honey.
Here we go. This is Celestium's I don't think so, honey, and their time starts now.
I don't think so, honey, seasonal allergies. You need to leave.
Come on.
Me and my loved ones alone. I am sneezing. I'm coughing. My nose
Say
is
that.
Dry. And you win when I lose, and it is pathetic.
Go
when
off.
The weather gets nice, it means that I get happy. And you see that? And you don't like that? And you punish me for that, okay? You made me and Bowen cough. Around our friends.
Yes.
Because there's a different reason that people are coughing right now. Our coughing scared them. Okay. Mm. And you are scary and
30 seconds.
Sad. The medicine that I have to take just to keep your bullshit at bay causes me to have other symptoms of other illnesses. My nasal spray, it gives me nosebleeds. I took an Allegra before going on a date and was so drowsy that I felt like
seconds.
I was in a dream trying to run and I had to leave abruptly. And now she thinks I'm weird.
No.
You are doing illness drag and you are doing it poorly. My love, you wish
Five
you were
seconds.
A contagious illness, but you never will be, honey. You're seasonal and you're temporary. And as soon as the flowers die, you'll be gone too. Okay, get a life. I hope it's not easy.
Oh my God! Yes! Wow, that you really came
seasonal
from
allergies found dead.
I'm sick of it.
Celeste and I were in the Hamptons. I have never had that much eczema in my life because of my allergies. We were coughing all week, and people were genuinely scared.
They were upset.
I don't like it when people are bodily around me at all.
It was scary, but
it was
I
scary.
Not. Cough.
We were coughing for a long time.
It was something that not even a Claritin or a Flonase could deal with.
No.
No.
We
that was
it
the
all.
Best case scenario. Ugh. We were
Celeste,
drugged up.
Can I confess something, Celeste?
Yeah, Bo.
One night in the middle of the night, you did wake me up because you were coughing a lot, and I thought, are they okay? I hope they're okay. Should I go check on them?
Oh.
And there was a... No. This is not...
Humiliating.
This is me...
Well, it's intimate.
A few things are happening here. I'm humiliating Celeste.
Mm-hmm.
I am centering myself as someone who could have done something.
And chose to stay silent.
And chose to stay silent.
And comfortable.
And comfortable.
He chose to stay silent and comfortable in the Hamptons.
And I apologize, Celeste. And I apologize.
Thank you. I forgive you.
I don't know why I had to tell that story, but there was a night where I thought, am I going to have to take them to the hospital?
Oh. It was weighing on you. It was
because
weighing on you.
It was weighing on me.
Yeah, well, it was like a situation of I was like opening the window to get fresh air in these lungs.
Breathing in the colors of the
wind. I truly was SOL, shit out of luck.
Damn.
Yeah,
damn,
at that
damn,
time.
Damn.
I don't know
survived,
what's going
but this,
on.
This day didn't go well.
Well, I acted really weird. And
you should tell her that it was the allergies.
Well,
if you're still interested.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's just
are you
like
not
a kind of situation
anymore?
Where it's running my life. I actually am interested, and I do worry that she will go ahead and be listening.
Oh.
We can cut this out.
Well,
we can cut this out.
No, it's not like that.
No, Celeste is dangerous.
This has been an extremely vulnerable and raw episode.
Yeah.
I agree. I really
and
agree.
And I think that it's best if we leave it that way.
Yeah.
I love it.
What
this.
Do you guys think?
I think we should. We should leave it.
I think we should leave it exactly as is. No edits.
I offer up the option to edit while Matt embraces.
I often embrace chaos.
The authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
but not really. But on this episode, we were raw. We were real.
Yes.
We went there. Yeah. We went off.
Uh-huh.
We were in luck.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
gosh.
Now, see, if were sleeping, you know what that would have done.
can I ask you a question? Would you have helped a hacking Bowen?
I think I would have texted.
Yeah.
Texted?
So, I think that...
I was about to go over to you in the middle of the night and be like, "Are you okay? Like, let's go."
So sweet. You were gonna offer to leave the house.
I would have offered for us to drive to drive somewhere, to go somewhere.
He wouldn't have needed that. That's what you needed at all.
So
he was gonna
sweet.
Take you out back to shoot you.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, he was gonna kill
that's
you.
That's the impression I'm getting.
Celeste, this
I
was
love
a true
you guys.
Pleasure. This is a true pleasure, and you know, we would like you to come back.
One of the loves of my life,
really?
Celestia. Truly love.
We
love,
would.
Love,
because
love
the
in
second
the
you
way.
Stole the show at the Toronto I Don't Think So Honey, it was a true moment in time.
I will say that moving to New York, I felt that it was possible to be there, knowing that you guys were there.
Oh.
I have long looked up to you.
Oh,
I appreciate you both so much. You really both have stuck your necks out for me.
You freak.
For the chopping, on the chopping block.
On the chopping block.
To be cleaved like chicken bone.
To be cleaved.
To protect me. And I appreciate it. I love you both very, very much.
Well, this was a fun threesome. And it was hot and steamy and sexy, and all of our
it was
butts
good and then
were,
bad.
It was good and then bad. and then it eventually got our butts were all sweaty and hot together, just like it was when you were young and in that sort
Jennifer's
of environment,
body.
Watching Jennifer's,
Jennifer's
body.
Body.
Perfect for me.
And if you, the reader, aren't wiggling your bottoms out, then guess what? You're SOL.
SOL.
Shit.
Adam,
out of luck.
We finish with a song. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else.
For more of that song, listen to the Juno soundtrack. And the song was written by Michael Cera and Elliot Page.
Was it?
No.
I think Elliot wrote it. Oh, no, that was the Moldy Peaches. I'm sorry.
And
the Moldy Peaches.
Go. Bye.
Okay, bye.